This is the Game Misconduct Podcast with Don LaGreca.
And welcome to the Monday edition of Game Misconduct. I'm Don LaGreca. Monday means EJ Raddick from the NHL Network, NHL Now, 6 to 4 Eastern Time. Happy Easter, buddy. How are you?
You got me on that long shift again, 6 to 4.
Oh, and I did it again?
That's a long shift.
Four to six.
I mean, listen, I like to work. Listen, don't get me wrong.
Oh, I like to work.
And if I did the 6 to 4, I would be covering the entire night of games and then some.
And then you get 2 hours of nap, and then you'd be ready.
I'd be ready to go again. So, I mean, I appreciate it. I appreciate your confidence in me.
Oh, my God. Yeah. It's a long weekend.
Listen, we're busy. There's a lot happening. You're extremely busy. I mean, you got two small children now. You're working 6 jobs. I mean, you got a lot going on.
There's a lot going on. You're absolutely right.
A major holiday.
You totally nailed it. You totally.
But I just laughed, and I just thought it was funny. That's all.
There's a million different places we can go here, but I'd rather start from the beginning because I don't want to forget because everything is so fresh in our mind for what happened over the weekend. But let's go back to Friday. The Flames go quietly into that good night. For you,
Yes. Is
that more about how well the Avalanche played or just how poorly the Flames played?
Oh, I'm going to say, if you make me choose one or the other, I'm going to say it's how well the Avalanche played because, I mean, their big guys really were a force in that series. I mean, McKinnon, kind of a force of will. For him, Rantanen came back, played extremely well. Landeskog is in the battle. Tyson Barrie doesn't get enough attention. He was really good in the series. Cale McCarr jumps in, right from college and plays 3 games and has a couple of points and is a big plus player. And Philip Grubauer has been really good for the last 2 months, and he continues to be really good for the Colorado Avalanche. So I'm going to say it was more about the ability for the Avalanche to really get their speed game going and for their big players to really play well than it was about the Flames, who, they kind of stopped playing down the stretch because they didn't have to, and they rested a lot of guys, and I don't know, they just never got back on track, and, Mike Smith, who we thought would be the problem, really wasn't.
That's the thing with me, right?
Well. Yeah,
if you were to tell me they were going to lose in 5 games, you'd say, okay, the goaltending betrayed them. No, the goaltending I thought was great.
Yeah, the goaltending was really good. And, I mean, the Stars didn't produce offense. And, a guy like Mark Giordano, who was, he's nominated for the Norris Trophy now and had a great year. I mean, he kind of looked like he struggled on D against some of that speed. And, the Flames just never had an answer. And, Bill Peters was never able to make the adjustments necessary. Maybe he didn't have the personnel in front of him couldn't make those adjustments. They opted to scratch James Neal, who just never has fit in Calgary this season. And I know he had no points in his 4 games, didn't play all that well. But, for a game 5, when you're in an elimination game, I think James Neal might have been the only guy that has played in big games on that, franchise. So you might want to leave him in for that game and maybe move him up in the lineup and try to do things differently. They opted to scratch him. He's got 4 years left on a contract at 5.75 per season for each of the next 4 years against the cap. So I guess that's going to be something that they're going to have to deal with internally there. But, I just think that, that they were just overmatched in that series just by the sheer speed of the Avalanche.
Yeah, I know it's an old adage, but I think it's old for a reason, is that your best players have to be your best players. And there just wasn't a lot of the best players for the Flames. Where was Giordano? Where was Gaudreau? These were guys that carried them during the course of the regular season. And I kept thinking about something you said earlier over the last couple of weeks with these upsets, is that sometimes these skilled teams, you can get a little physical with them. And I think that's what happened with Gaudreau, right? Whether they're trying to slash at him, get physical with him, frustrate him, and he was completely taken out of the series.
Yeah, I mean, I think, what happens in the playoffs, and, I think the standard does change a little bit, but I think also a problem for the officials is that the number of fouls that occur in these games because of the way the ferocious nature of the way teams play, I mean, you could call a penalty literally every time somebody's in the offensive or, zone, I think the referees, again, I think the standard changed a little bit, so they allow more to go. But also, the sheer number of fouls And you have to be able to play through that. And that's reality. I mean, we could sit here and talk all day long about how, you know, things maybe should be different, but that's the reality. And you could see Johnny Gaudreau was very frustrated by the officials. In fact, after the handshake line, he kind of skated by the officials and just was mumbling the word bad, bad, bad over and over and just shaking his head. So he was clearly bothered by it. And if you can get in the head of a player like that, who's such an important player for the Flames, you know, that's a, you know, you've accomplished what you were looking for if you're the Avalanche. Avalanche were just bigger, stronger, faster as a whole. And I think that, you know, Calgary, they've got some really good players there, but they've got more tinkering to do. And, you know, as teams are finding out, the playoffs, as we've always known, and I guess teams know, I mean, the playoffs are just so different than the regular season. And it's, you know, it's hard putting all those pieces in place. So Calgary back to the drawing board.
Yeah. And we stay in Canada with Winnipeg going out. But to me, this is way less outrageous. Now, I had picked the Jets. You picked the Blues. But it was a coin flip series. I don't think anybody could have been overly surprised by the outcome of this. I mean, it went six games. You knew eventually the worm would turn for the home team. I give both teams credit for the comebacks. But to me, the turning point in this series came in game five, right? You cannot blow a two-goal lead in the third period. You just can't do that. As controversial as the Winnipeg Jet fans want to make it with the net off the moorings, the league got that rule right. And you know, listen, Jaden Schwartz, we had a chance to talk to him when he first came into the league. Remember doing NHL Live and, you know, with everything that happened with his sister and all that. And it's a tremendous story, but you know, he was dominant. I mean, he came to play. What, he scored four straight goals between games four, five and six. And, and that was the difference to me. That was the turning point. That was the tough one to overcome. Everybody was blowing leads in that series. But to blow a two-goal lead at home the way they did, letting the game-winning goal get scored with 15 seconds to go, that's a tough thing to bounce back from.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. And, you know, when you go back, I think I agree with you also. The league got that call right on the tying goal that where the net went off the moorings. I think that was the right call. And then I thought on the game winner, it's interesting. A couple of things happened on that play in Game 5 that led to the goal by Schwartz. And one of them is that Jacob Trouba tried to kind of pin the puck against the boards with about 23 seconds left on the clock. I don't think he was aware of the time. Because you can pin a puck late if there's like, you know, seven seconds left and pretty much kind of hope you can run the clock out, especially if you're a big man like Trouba. I think he went back. He was in an odd spot. He didn't see any options.
Right.
I just, quite frankly, think he did not know how much time was left in the game. He was able to pin it for several seconds, but eventually Schwartz was the guy that was able to pitchfork it loose. And even after he did that, you can see Trouba then as he comes off the wall looking up, looking for the clock. Because, I mean, that's the only thing he could be looking for in that situation. I just don't think he was aware of the time, and it goes back to something that I think the league is going to do, which is a good thing, is they're going to put the clocks in the corners. You know, they're going to insert like a clock in two corners of the rink, because I think sometimes players can't find players and coaches because they're looking for the, you know, if you're on, especially if you're on the road, in this case, Trouba was home. But if you're on the road, you maybe don't know where to look to find how much time is left in a certain situation. So there's a lot of things that conspired in that last play against the Jets, but at the end of the day, you're right. I mean, they had a two-goal lead. They controlled the game, and they were not able to get things turned back around. So give the Blues a lot of credit. Craig Berube and his coaching staff have done just an unbelievable job this year turning this thing around. You know, everybody, last summer, the Ryan O'Reilly deal went down, and there were a lot of people that just talked about how great a deal that was for the Sabres, and I was not on that bandwagon. I mean, I don't get them all right, but I got that one right. I mean, Ryan O'Reilly's a really good player. It just didn't work in Buffalo for him for whatever reason, and that was a great acquisition by the Blues, and now they're getting contributions from all different places. And, you know, to be quite honest with you, I'd be really thrilled for the Blues fans if this was going to be one of those magical years where they win the Stanley Cup, because they're one of those franchises like the Caps last year that have never experienced that. And it's a great fan base. It's a great sports town. And, you know, they're on a little bit of a roll right now. I think the only negative for them is that they match up way better against the Preds than they do against the Stars. And I think the Stars are going to win that series. So it'll be a tough second round for St. Louis.
Yeah. So let's go to the series that are still going on here in the West. I guess we'll go to what happened last night. The Sharks stay alive. I'm getting beat up by Shark fans because after they lost game game four, when they were down three games to one. They had never come back from 3-1 down. And look at the stats. And they lost three straight games by a combined 16-6. Their starting goaltender was pulled in two of the three games. Yep. You know, they played god-awful in the last month of the season. So I just said, they're dead. They're cooked. How can they possibly come back? And then I did the pre and post for Westwood One for game five. Jones stood on his head, made some huge saves, especially he was completely in Tuck's head, stopping him a couple of times. Pacioretty with a couple of point blank shots in the third period. And then he played even better last night in the double overtime victory. So I guess it's now possible, right? I mean, because now the worm is completely turned. You know, what's going on with Vegas? Fleury gives up a goal. I'm sure he'd love to have back in that double overtime. And so right now you look at it, and how can the Sharks lose because of the way Jones has played? And I guess the only way, just remind yourself how quickly it can turn. But right now, boy, it has for San Jose.
Yeah, it really has. I mean, I'll tell you, I am absolutely shocked that we're playing a Game 7 here. And if anybody wanted to give you any grief about what happened, you know, in game, you know, after game four, though, I don't think there were very many people. I talked to Mike Johnson today, who's been calling that series, and he's a colleague of ours at NHL Network. And, you know, he said, you know, I asked him that question. He agreed with you and with me in that series looked to be done. Even if San Jose could win game five, there was very little hope that we would have guessed that they would go into Vegas, where they have had a lot of tough losses over the last 2 years in the playoffs, and find a way to win. But, you know, the only thing I could point to really is the return of Mark-Edward Vlasic as someone who could steady out that group defensively. Mm-hmm. Yes, they gave up a ton of shots last night, but I think the quality of the shots against over the last 2 days is over the last two games hasn't been near as bad as they were in games 2, 3, and 4. And remember, the games that Vlasic has finished in this series, Sharks have won all three. The games where he did not play or did not finish the game,
Brian,
they've lost all three. I think that he is such a good player in the D zone that it makes that team much better structurally. They don't give up as much off the rush. And, you know, I think that's the key. Now, all that said, I think, you know, Peter DeBoer, I spoke with him after game one of that series, and he talked about the dangerous things about the Knights, is they're a real big momentum team, and if they get that first goal in games, they get rolling. And we saw that play out in games 2, 3, and 4. And they haven't been able to do that in the last two, and the Sharks were able to win. I think game 7 is a single game onto its own. I don't think anything that's happened before this is going to matter much. Jones seems to have his game back. Fleury is a guy that's won game 7s. I think what will be important is how the Sharks do in terms of keeping Vegas on the outside, on the perimeter, and limiting those rush chances. If they can continue to play that way defensively and give Vegas shots, but not quality shots, they'll have a chance to win the game. If they can't do that, they will likely lose. So it should be a heck of a game on Tuesday night.
Now, I remember, you know, like you said, the momentum is so big for Vegas, but yet they never took advantage of it in game five. If you remember, Riley scored that power play goal with 30 seconds to go in the period to make it 2-1. It was an awful goal by Jones, right? It was like, okay, here we go. And they never, and Chicago, San Jose stabilized it. They get the insurance goal, you know, with less than 8 minutes to go in the second period, and then held on from there for the 5-2 win. So yeah, it'll be an interesting game seven. So we got a couple of game sevens, that are coming up, potentially a game seven between Dallas and Nashville. I'm with you. I picked Dallas to win this series in seven. But right now, it's just, what's up with the Preds at home? You know, and they get the early goal on Saturday, but Dallas just, no big deal. They just fluffed it off and just went about their business, and they got the Dickerson goal and kind of just went from there. Radulov was good with a couple of goals on Saturday. So you think Dallas closes it out tonight?
Hey, listen, these games are always interesting, right? I think they do. I think Dallas should have already won this series. I think they should have won game three if it weren't for the kind of poor play of Ben Bishop in that particular game and the really strong play of, you know, of Pekka Rinne for Nashville. So I think Dallas has been the better of the team for most of the series. They are at home tonight. They'll get the last chance. You know, like we talked about Colorado, about the best players playing their best. You know, I think everybody's always got to play up to their high level of their capability or to their potential, but certainly when the best players do that, it stands out more. And Ben Sagan, Radulov, Klingberg, Zuccarello, Haskin, and those guys have all played terrific for Dallas. And they're getting really a nice nice bump from their second line now with Rupe Hintz, Jacob Dickinson, and Matt Zuccarello. So he's been a great fit in Dallas, and I thought he might be for that group. So, I think they're going to close it out tonight, but, hey, it's the Stanley Cup playoffs. We've already seen
Yeah, you never know.
What the heck. We just talked about San Jose and Vegas, right? We thought that series was over after Game 4, and they're going to a Game 7. So I'm sure Nashville will come with their best effort tonight. They're going to need to, though, because Dallas has been playing very well.
All right, Dallas wants to try to avoid what happened to Toronto yesterday. The Leafs had a chance to close it out at home. They got the early goal. Couldn't do it. Now they've got a Game 7 in Boston, which is eerily similar to their fates over the last few years. But really, what it comes down to is that Boston just hasn't been consistent, right? I mean, every time I keep thinking, all right, they're the Bruins, they're fine, they're going to cruise, and then they come up with a stinker in the next game. They've alternated here now in this playoff, so I have no idea what's going to happen in Game 7. My gut tells me it'll be Boston because I think overall they're the better team. But they've jerked around a lot in this series, and they really shouldn't be in a Game 7, but here they are in a Game 7 that could be very, very dangerous.
Well, it's kind of back and forth, and I think Toronto has played very well. I think the key to this series so far has been Toronto's penalty killing has been so bad. I mean, they're near the bottom. I think they're 15th out of the 16 playoff teams, and Boston's been able to take advantage on the power play. I mean, that really played out in Game 6. I think Toronto came out strong, hit a post, then they scored a goal, 1-0, took a penalty, Bruins score, take another penalty, Bruins score again, they go to the locker room 2-1, and Boston is feeling good about their game. So in Game 7, and we've seen this play out, Don, the referees don't call a ton of penalties. That probably will play into the advantage of the Toronto Maple Leafs, but my advice is don't take any, and if you do, you're going to have to do a better job killing those
Much
penalties
better.
Because you're giving up power play goals to the Boston Bruins in their building. It's probably not going to be a good situation. So I think that'll probably be the biggest key. And I think also for Toronto, I mean, this is a huge game for John Tavares, one, and also, for Mitch Marner. Those guys have been big players for this team all year. They haven't done much offensively production-wise since the start of the series. But particularly Tavares because, he was the big free agent acquisition by the Toronto Maple Leafs and, going there and going to be a difference maker. And this is why you're going to pay John 8 years and $11 million is to come up with a really big performance in Game 7 on the road against the Leafs. So I'll be keeping an eye on that for sure, because if they can kill penalties or don't take a lot, but certainly kill them when they get them, and Tavares and Marner get their game going, I think the Leafs have an excellent chance to win.
And the only one left now, the talk about Capitals and the Hurricanes. It's been a home ice series with the home team winning every game, but really you saw the Capitals lay the wood in the Game 5 at home. I mean, these games are very close, competitive, but not Game 5. Do you think that doesn't matter when they go back to Raleigh? It'll just stay, holding serve? Or did the statement the Capitals made with that 6-0 victory make it tough for the Hurricanes to figure out how to close the series and force a Game 7?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the Hurricanes will be kind of buoyed by their home crowd as they've been throughout the playoffs and during the regular season as well. I mean, remember, in Game 3, they blew out the Caps. So, I mean, that was that was something that they could lean on the Capitals to bounce back, lost a close game. And then they had their way with things in Game 5. I think the Caps were emotionally juiced up by the injury to Oshie, and I think they wanted to kind of win that for him. It was probably, it was obviously their best game of the playoffs so far. Matchup-wise, they should be able to beat the Carolina Hurricanes, especially with the Canes missing some guys out of the lineup. But, this has been a weird year of playoffs, and it's been a weird year in Carolina.
Oh, sure.
And they certainly draw a lot of energy from their crowd, so I think they will give their best effort tonight. And I think they'll be. I expect it to be a close game, and I expect them to be right in it. And if they win and force a Game 7, I won't be surprised. Although I don't think they can win a Game 7 in Washington.
I remember doing the math one time, one of the series the Rangers were in, and I kind of just went to that big NHL guide and record book and kind of went through the history. And, out of the numbers in front of me, but my mind's eye, and I'm sure you can back this up, is that usually a blowout's followed by a very close game. Right? Yeah, I'm not saying that the Hurricanes are going to win the game, but that's usually what happens, right? You beat a team 6-0, you're like, this series is over, and then the very next game ends in, like, overtime. I think I expect a classic tonight, and we'll see what ends up happening. I'd love to be able to get a Game 7 in these two games tonight, because then we'll have two Game 7s tomorrow, two Game 7s on Wednesday. That'd be terrific, and that will be what everybody remembers about what's happening with these playoffs, but you can't predict it. And then this gets to our first tweet from Philip. He's like, hi, guys, don't get me wrong. I love the playoffs, but to be a top four seed in the conference should be rewarded with something more than just home ice advantage. Home ice doesn't make a big difference. Do you get my point? What could that difference be? And now, listen, we might see all four of the top teams in the league, the one and two in each conference, be out in the first round.
Yeah.
Now, is that a statement of, hey, that's the playoffs, you got to live with it? Or is do you look at it and say, we should reward these teams with whether it's extra home games, a bye, you know, all the – I mean, is it a statement of just, hey, this is great, or we should reward the regular season winners with a little something extra than just one more home game?
Well, I mean, historically, that's all we've ever given them, right? I mean, that's in all the sports. I mean, I don't remember, you know, in baseball and in basketball and in sports where you play series of games to advance. I don't remember a situation where we gave.
I guess they had buys back in the day, right?
Well, there's buys, yeah, but that would mean that you'd have to then advance other teams into the playoffs, and, you know, unless you're just going to. You know, I know that the National Hockey League and all these sports leagues aren't in business of playing fewer games. You know, they want to play more games. So the thing you could do is maybe have a play-in game, forcing an 8 and 9 play-in game, or you know, maybe a little tournament of 7, 8, 9, and 10, where those teams have to play off to get in, and then they take on the number ones and twos. But you know, at the end of the day, what does that really do? I mean, maybe it gives that team more energy, you know, to come in and win a game and get into the next round. I just think that the league is really, really competitive. With the salary cap, it is limited, you know, some of the things you can do. You have to draft and develop really well. And the fact that the regular season and the playoffs are kind of two different animals. And, you know, that makes a difference, too. It's just like baseball, really. Like, you know, when I think of, you know, baseball teams that get to the playoffs, I mean, you know, the Yankees, for example, because I follow them, I mean, they can batter their way through the regular season and not have great starting pitching, but then you get to the playoffs, and, you know, if you don't have that guy that can give you six, seven innings, a scoreless ball and get you the lead to give to the bullpen, chances are you're not going to win. So the playoffs are different, I think, in all sports, and they're really different in the NHL where the standard changes a little bit, and teams can drill down on one another for all the little strengths and weaknesses.
No, there's no question. And one thing John Tortorella always said was home ice advantage doesn't mean anything until you get to a game seven. All right. So none of the teams, Tampa, Calgary, got to the game seven. But if Boston wins tomorrow, you know, if Nashville forces a game seven tonight and they win that game seven, there's examples where, you know what, the regular season was important because that team was able to get that home ice in the biggest game of the year. And listen, when the smoke settles, if Boston wins the cup, if Washington wins the cup, if, you know, Nashville survives or whatever, it's still a team that was very good. It's still a team that had home ice advantage that wins. So, hey, I don't know anybody that wants to play on the road. I don't want anybody that wants to be a 7 or 8 seed. So I know a lot of people are trying to talk away the regular season as being meaningless. But believe me, whoever wins the cup, especially if it's Washington or Boston, which still has very much a step to do that, are going to appreciate that they had key games on home ice.
Yeah, no, I would agree.
Irene says, after game 5, Tomas Hertl guaranteed game 7. Awesome to back it up with an overtime goal. At times, he's clearly the best Shark player, playing a possession-heavy power forward style. Do you see him becoming a star in this league?
I think he's got the potential to become a really high-end player. I don't know if he's, you know, I think he's already kind of somebody that's a bright light, you know, in San Jose and has the potential to be even better. I don't know if he's going to become a you know, a superstar player in the league, but he's a really good player, and he's got a terrific personality, and he's got that big kind of Cheshire Cat smile when things are going well. He looks a lot like Jaromir Jagr to me. I mean, both on the ice, you know, in terms of being a big, thick, strong forward with a lot of skill, and just, you know, facially, I think he looks a lot like Jaromir. So he's a really good player, and he's had some injuries earlier in his career that have slowed him down a little bit, but he's a very talented guy, and he's amongst the leaders in, I think he's tied for the lead in shot attempts from the slot in the postseason. So he's getting those areas, and he's getting those quality chances, and he's been able to bury a handful of them. So let's face it, all these teams, you need contributions from everybody moving forward. So he will be another. He will be a big factor again when the teams go onto the ice in San Jose Tuesday night for Game 7.
Casey wants to know, are the Sharks or Jones really, 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 really flipped the switch, or do you think this is a foundational momentum that could propel them to the playoffs? Or do you think they're done in the second or third round?
No, I think that whoever wins that game tomorrow night between San Jose and Vegas has got an excellent chance to continue on and have a great postseason. Now, the wild card and all that for them is that the Colorado Avalanche are sitting there waiting, and they do look like a ferocious group right now. They're fast, they're big, they've got really high-end players playing well. They added a defenseman who's young, inexperienced, but's got a lot of just natural skill and ability and doesn't seem bothered by the moment. Their goaltender has played very, very well for them. So, I think San Jose or Vegas, whoever comes out of that, is going to be a real force to deal with. But, so are the Avalanche right now. And, I don't think anybody wants to overlook them the way they're playing.
I'm getting a couple of tweets here, so I'll just combine them all. The criticism that Marc-Andre Fleury is getting for that goal. And, I look at it and I say, it surprised me. There's no question. Yeah. You kind of mentally prepare yourself for moments, right? Because that's what's great about the overtime is you can't even look away. But sometimes the puck's in the other end, team's shorthanded. I didn't think that Hurdle was any kind of a legitimate threat there. But obviously, I think, I forget who the defenseman was, Stick, might have had something to do with it. Maybe it knuckled the puck. Maybe he's reading the shot that he couldn't fully read because Hurdle couldn't follow through with the shot. But really, criticizing Fleury, you won a cup with him last year. He's been outstanding. Are you a little surprised that he's under so much scrutiny, so much heat?
It's part of being in that position, right? I mean, the fact is that it was, Martin Jones is a guy that was under so much scrutiny and heat. And now you have a game where one team has over 100 shot attempts and has 60 shots in the game. And the other side is only facing into a second overtime is only facing, 30 or so shots. And, it's a whole different sequence. And the guy comes in shorthanded and beats you with a shot that most people feel will be stopped in today's game. Now, I think, in talking to a couple of people about that play, I think what happened was, to give the listener an idea of what Fleury was looking at there, is that the defenseman was Shea Theodore. He kind of went stick on stick with Hurdle as Hurdle released the shot. He didn't touch the puck or change the trajectory of the puck per se, but I think it changed the read for Fleury,
right,
in that he was kind of, his follow through was impeded by the stick of Theodore. And so the puck, which looked to Fleury like it was going to be, looked like the shot attempt was going to go glove side, the shot came the other way, and I think Fleury was leaning one way, and then the puck came back the other on him and beat him. So the scrutiny for these goaltenders is high. People don't expect those goals to go in. You saw a couple that went in on Ben Bishop in Game 3, and certainly people were on that. We have to report these things and call them as we see them, but it was I think that's what happened to Fleury on that particular play, and at the end of the day, the Vegas Golden Knights had a lot of opportunities in that game and
couldn't get
a second goal.
What was it, 59 shots? I mean, come on.
59 shots, and I think they had over 100 shot attempts. I'd have to go back and go through it. I think it was somewhere in the area of 119 shot attempts in the game.
Well, that's what you're seeing, right, EJ? I mean, there's no such thing as a bad shot. Get the puck to the net.
Right. You know what? I talked to Andrew Cogliano the other day. He was on our show, and he's a terrific penalty killer for the Dallas Stars. He was in Anaheim and Edmonton prior to that. And I asked him, I said, as a good penalty killer, what makes a good power play? Because you're dealing with all these things. And he said, really the best power plays are the power plays where the guys are willing to shoot the puck, come off the wall and shoot the puck sometimes. He goes, that's more challenging for me. We like to keep them moving the puck around the outside. And I referenced that in terms of, as you talked about, getting pucks to the net. In the Boston game on Sunday, the two power play goals were plays that occurred because the guy with the puck was willing to shoot it at the net. It was a 50-50 faceoff play where Marchand got to a loose puck in the circle and just fired it at the net. It hit Ron Hainsey's shin pad and went in.
Yeah.
A little bit later, Pastrnak had it in the off-wing circle. He turned and wheeled and fired a hard, low shot at Freddie Anderson. It hit his pads, and it was one of those pass-off pads kind of plays, and it went right on an angle to Torrey Krug, who made a great shot. But the willingness of those two guys to shoot the puck in those situations made a difference.
Yeah.
So oftentimes in games when I'm watching, I get frustrated watching myself and going, boy, would somebody please just shoot this puck? Because the defenders then have to turn around and defend And, you know, that's when the scramble begins, and that's when you have opportunities to score goals.
Now, I just know, not just on the power play, but just in this league in general, you know, doing play-by-play, how often I call a goal, and I'm not sure who scored it because it deflected off of somebody. Somebody takes a shot because yep. there's so much traffic in net now. You know, the guy streaking down the wing like Guy LaFleur and winding up and taking a shot at the dot and scoring. Those days are over now. Most of the goals are yep. dirty goals, scrums in front, a blast from the point that deflects off of three bodies into the net. So why wouldn't you get more traffic? Why wouldn't you throw more pucks to the net? That's probably how it's going to go in anyway. Don't wait for the yep. perfect shot. You wait forever.
Yes, and in the playoffs, when you're trying to get, to me again, getting pucks from the net
yeah.
is purpose. I mean, you know, but you have to try to get pucks in the net. I mean, last night in this game, you know, oddly enough, Vegas had 119 shot attempts. I just did the math, and San Jose had 69. So it was a wide variety of difference. But in the end, I thought San Jose did a good job of limiting those rush chances and also limiting yeah. the really high danger chances. So it's always a quantity-quality thing, but
sure.
I don't think you could really go wrong by trying to get pucks to the net.
No, not at all. You wait for that perfect play, and you're wasting time, that's for sure. Well, listen, I kind of look at this as a victory, EJ. I asked you a series of questions, and not once did you tell me to F off.
Yeah, there you go.
All right, no.
Why would I do that?
Well, because,
why would I do that?
Well, it's kind of an ode to Blake Wheeler and what happened in Winnipeg. But, you know... But it was a hockey F off. He told the reporter to F off and then proceeded to answer his question as politely as humanly possible.
Yes. You know, I'll be curious to see what's going to happen there because I've been saying for a while. I mean, I think Paul Maurice is a terrific person.
Yeah.
And he's coached a long time in this league and his record is around 500. And Winnipeg has got some high end personnel there. He has been there for several seasons. They have made strides under his leadership there, but I think it might be time for a look at someone else maybe to go there and maybe a different voice. And they're going to have some challenges, too, just signing players there because they've got, you know, Tyler Myers is an unrestricted free agent. Truba is a restricted free agent. They've got other high-end players that are restricted free agents that don't have arbitration rights, but still like a Line A and those type of players. I mean, they're going to be looking for more money. So I think Kevin Cheveldayoff, who is a former Assistant General Manager of the Year Award winner,
that's right.
Alive,
that's right.
is gonna have his hands full. I mean, most have really gone on to great things after winning that prestigious award.
Yes.
So as he has, but he will be challenged now as he looks to take the next step with that team.
Well, you know, it's always a pleasure. You know, I saw Mike Kitchen in Buffalo a few weeks ago when I was yeah. calling the Ranger Sabre game, and I reminded him that he also won the award for best name.
There you go.
He didn't remember, unfortunately, but I reminded him. And
I'm surprised he wouldn't remember that.
Well, you know what? I don't know. I don't know why he wouldn't. You know, I don't know what his concussion history is.
I have an idea why he wouldn't. It's not that important.
Yeah. I mean, we're talking about prestigious awards here, like Assistant yeah. General Manager of the Year.
But, yeah, Assistant GM you know, of the Year is
the best name doesn't really...
Actually,
you know what? I keep saying Mike Kitchen. I'm about Davis Payne. That's what I'm talking about. Davis. I saw Davis Payne in Buffalo.
And I don't even remember who
I was talking to, so how can I blame him? It was Davis Payne. I'm like, well, no, Mike Kitchen's a nice name, but no, it was Davis Payne. God. Between that and you're on from 6 to 4, I don't even know what ended up. Anymore. Yeah, I've been watching too much hockey. That's what I'm doing.
I'm liking that 6 to 4 shift.
Yeah, I think you should renegotiate.
Yes. I'm sure they'd be willing to pay me nothing more to do it.
Right.
So,
all right.
Anyway.
Well, our apologies to Davis Davis Payne. I will talk to you again next Monday. We'll have a clearer picture on what's going on. Enjoy your week.
We'll just have a clearer picture of everything.
I guess, maybe. Life, whatever. Yeah. All right, buddy.
Who knows? All right. See you, Donnie.
All right. That's EJ Raddick. Two games tonight. 7 o'clock Caps and Hurricanes. 8:30 Predators and Stars. So if the Predators win and the Hurricanes win, we could have 4 game sevens out of the first round, which would be unbelievable. We already know we've got the 2 tomorrow. And if the Caps lose and the Stars lose, we'll have 2 game sevens on Wednesday. Hopefully get at least 1. I like his pick. I like the Hurricanes to bounce back, but I also think the Stars are going to finish things off at home. We'll have to wait and see. I've been wrong quite a bit. I've been right and I've been wrong, mostly wrong. But when I'm right, you know what? I'll let you know. All right. Back with you again tomorrow. Thanks for everybody for tuning in. Thanks a lot for getting the tweets going. That Don LaGreca hashtag game misconduct. We'll recap it all coming up tomorrow. This was the Monday edition of Game Misconduct.
Thanks for listening to the Game Misconduct podcast. Looking for more Don LaGreca? Hear him on the Michael K. Show weekdays from 3 to 7 p.m. on 98.7 ESPN in New York. and worldwide on the ESPN app. And don't forget to subscribe to the Game Misconduct Podcast on the ESPN app, Google Play Music, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.